Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are getting an update from TDG Gold, traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol TDG. I am chatting with the president and CEO, Fletcher Morgan. TDG Gold is focused in the Tootagong Corridor in north central British Columbia. The company has a couple projects, a Shasta project that they have been releasing a number of drill holes over the last about month now. Also the Metz project, which we had some sample results come out about a week to two ago. We're going to talk about all of these results, especially focused on the Shasta project because of all the results that have come out. But Fletcher, I want you just to give everybody a little background. Again, remind them about this drill program. It's 8,000 meters, 50 holes were completed here. We're getting a trickle of these holes coming out now, but what was the overall strategy for this? What was your guys' first drill program on this project?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on the show, Corey. Yeah, happy to answer that. Look, last year we did set out to drill 10,000 meters in 55 to 60 holes at Shasta. In the end, we managed to do just over 8,000 meters, as you said. It was in 55 holes. And the reason we were focused on Shasta was the information from the historical drilling said to us that there was an opportunity there to get back in to validate that historical drilling. There was over 28,000 meters drilled there historically. We recompiled all of that information. We felt there was an opportunity to get back in, confirm that those historical results, and also then to test around some of the extensions around the known mineralization at Shasta. Just as a reminder, it was mined historically up until 2012 as a combination open pit underground small scale mining operation. The previous operator was seeking those epithermal high grade gold and ultra high grade gold silver veins. So this was small scale production and running that all through the Baker Mill, which is also part of our land package, at around 200 tons a day, with a grade of around head grade around 8 to 10 grams a ton, and using a cutoff of anywhere between 2 and 4 grams. And what we perceived as the opportunity was to go back in there, because in the 1990s, it was well known that around those pods of high grade, there was this mineralized halo of medium and lower grade. And so at these metal prices today, the opportunity to get back in there, drill, and confirm whether Shasta indeed had those mineralized halos. And you're right, we've started to produce a trickle of results where we produce results now up to hole 8. And what you're seeing, those holes are really all from one side of the known mineralization at Shasta. Historically, it was thought of forming like an arrowhead kind of formation. And so one side of that arrow, we produce now results up to hole 8. And what we're seeing, and encouraging people to go and look at our slide deck, is the mineralized target zone that we anticipated from the historical work. We've seen positive reconciliation with that. And also we're seeing, an uptick in the overall gold grade, but also significantly higher silver. There's a couple of reasons for that, which I'm happy to go into, but I think it's really a good start and a lot more drill results to come.
Now, Fletcher, can you just make a little sense of how these drill results have been released? Because these 8 holes have come out in, I believe, 4 different news releases, and they've come out in kind of a sporadic fashion. Is there a reason for this?
Absolutely. And the first thing to say is, I apologize for that. It's because of the way that, the labs that we've been working with, or the lab particularly, was overwhelmed last year in terms of not just the amount of work they had, assays to run, but also COVID has obviously made everything more complex for everybody. But the net of it is that those results, as we see, the preliminary gold and silver results come in, we're able to then to start analyzing those. But wherever there is an over limit, whether it be for an assay, for whether it be gold or whether it be silver, then those assays have to be rerun. And so when you're fitting into an already congested schedule at the lab, those things can take another week to 2 weeks, unless you can get them prioritized. And then we've been in an enviable position of not just having having multiple of those over-limit samples. But we've also had some over-limit, certainly in the silver, where we're seeing samples of over 1,000 grams a ton, and those have to be rerun again. And so every time you get one of those, it resets our schedule on when we might be able to release those results, but it's for a fantastic reason. So, I'd like to think that moving forward, we'll be able to batch things up a bit more coherently, but no guarantees. And I think what's really important, though, Corey, as we move through into spring here, is to get those results out, start building that picture so that, the capital markets and people who are interested in following our story, they can see that through our eyes, what we're seeing is Shasta developing, and can start making some informed choices as to where they deploy their investment dollars, and leading, as we've said before, to that initial mineral resource estimate at Shasta. We did anticipate that we would get it out, sometime in Q1, given that I now think that we'll be publishing results all the way through to March. I'd like to think we get something out in April on that, but more realistically, May or June.
Okay, so the plan is still to come out with that initial resource, but again, you're only 8 holes, or at least reported 8 holes of that 50-hole program. So still a lot of news to come out. What are we seeing right now in terms of mineralized area or size from these 8 holes? How far have they stepped out? What sort of size concept can you give us?
Yeah, okay, so it's a great question. So the one side of the arrowhead that we produced the results from so far is around the historical creek pit, the creek zone. And so we're really up to 150 to 200 meters to the north of that now, and around 150 meters to the south as well. So an area of around 300 to 350 meters. And what we're seeing is mineralization that, we understand the structural control there. There's a fault running through it. And we're seeing that halo mineralization from the fault. In actual fact, some of the, some of the hanging wall is also mineralized, and then all the way through the foot wall down to significant depth. And those results that we're publishing, Corey, are not out of line with other results from companies also, exploring similar style deposits in the Tudagon and elsewhere. What's so good about what we're seeing is the homogeneity, the length of the mineralization and the grade that we're seeing. Yes, we've got those high grade pods. Those are fantastic. But around it, we're seeing tens of meters of what we believe will prove itself through analysis to be, very mineable grade material. And then one of the neat things about it as well is because of the historical mine workings that are there, that some of that target mineralized zone, you can almost imagine as pre-stripped. So what we're starting to see is this picture emerging in front of us of something that was a mine historically, and that we absolutely passionately believe will be a mine again, provided we go about it in the right way. And obviously, making sure that we have the support of all the stakeholders that we're working with, including obviously the communities in whose traditional territories we're fortunate enough to explore.
So Fletcher, I also want you to elaborate, or at least give a little explanation on the last news release where you also showed a lot of the historic drill results. Now, drill results back from, I believe, 1989 when these holes were drilled, and even early 90s. I assume here you're trying to show the fact that you guys are hitting some higher grade components that had been hit compared to what happened or what was drilled years ago. Why do you think that's happening?
Okay, so there's a few things there. I mean, strictly speaking, they knew that there were high-grade pods when they were exploring back in the 80s and 90s and all the way through to the 2000s. That's what they were looking to mine. But it really became a function at those metal prices as to how accessible those high-grade pods were. We're coming at it from a different perspective. We're interested in Shasta as a bulk tonnage target. We're interested in that halo-style mineralization around the high-grade pods, almost going up to surface. So we're coming at it through a slightly different lens than they did. So it's not just about the fact that we are seeing, high-grade pods, and we are seeing that uptick in the overall grade. They knew that these high-grade pods existed. We know they exist as well. It's just about how you can put those together into this mining scenario that we're contemplating now. And so we're able now to follow up. we're able to drill in between those historical drill holes, and we're able to then ask ourselves a slightly different question. It's not, can you put a drift in there to go and get to that stuff? It's actually, how accessible would that be from surface? Or would we still want to go underground to get to access that material? So hole six was the news release we published on Monday this week. And, you know, what we announced was 95.5 meters of 1.35 grams per ton gold equivalent. It was just under a gram gold and the rest is silver. And look, what's exciting about there is that is at the point of the arrowhead. And so what we're seeing is that mineralization, that halo style mineralization, and this breccia body, this breccia zone continues right to the top there and looks to us as though it really should be included in a resource model, a resource estimate that we're hoping to, like I said, produce in the first half of this year. And what I think your listeners should anticipate is that given that the other side of that arrowhead was mined historically as well at very sort of similar grades to the creek zone, that your listeners should anticipate that there will be similar style results coming down the other side of the arrowhead. But what's also intriguing is we are the first group that we believe that will have drilled in between those two sides of that arrowhead, the bit in the middle. And so we're asking ourselves the question, is this like a chevron? Is this an arrowhead, or is this actually just a big blobby triangle? And so those results will come in due course as well. We also did manage, Corey, to drill a step out area down to the south. It's about 800 meters to a kilometer below the historical JM pit. And so what's exciting about down there is that they did encounter some significant grades of gold and silver historically, but again, never mined and never really properly followed up upon. Now, this year, just to manage people's expectations, we only put a few holes in it within the permitted mine area. In 2022, we'd like to get back out there, and we'd certainly like to explore around there. Do some step out holes again around that zone and see if there's something there that is of sufficient continuity that we can actually then, involve in the mineral resource estimate and then hopefully through to some mining plan in the future. So exciting times, a long way to go on the current results to come, and a long way to go on really understanding Shasta and targeting the drill holes. And, you know, the other message that I'd like to get across is, you know, Shasta last year was all based on historical information. This year, it won't be the exploration. It'll be based on the new information as well, working with some excellent scientists who are helping to try and, to prioritize our targets. And we really believe now that we're moving into a new phase at Shasta, which will be about discovery cost per mineable ounce. And that's going to be our laser focus this year. Yes, we might do a bit more, blue sky work on parts of our other property. No one's ever drilled a 400 meter hole at Shasta. If we were going to drill one, where would we drill it and why? Well, I sure as heck like it to be something that would add to the, the mineable potential footprint at Shasta, rather than just trying to show, oh, look, there's more mineralization, because we're seeing there's mineralization everywhere at Shasta.
Okay. Thank you for those insights. It sounds like a lot of drill results still to come, and will be interesting to see what some of these results yield, including the expansion drilling, as well as the new target down to the south, and those holes that went between the two arrowheads. We will follow up when those are released. Let's also get a quick update from the Metz project. We had some sample results up to almost 33 grams per ton gold, 27 grams per ton gold. What's going on with the Metz project in terms of exploration?
It's a small mining lease that's located 23 kilometers by road up from our Baker mine. Historically, there was exploration undertaken there, just over 8,500 meters of drilling. We've managed to recompile around 7,900 meters of drilling and over 2,500 meters of historical trenching. There have been some really excellent explorationists who have been involved in Metz over since the 80s, including Ron Nedlitsky, formerly of Skeena Resources. And so we've been able to inherit that information and have a good look at it. Finding samples up there of 4 grams gold, 31 grams gold, 27 gram gold. This is not unsurprising. Metz has that kind of potential. And if you look at where it's located and other companies working in the area, that area is known for small pods of high grade. And that's exactly what Ron Nedlitsky and his team back in the 1980s, a company called Golden Rule, characterized at Metz. In 2009, Skeena owned this property. And again, we're looking at what the potential was. They identified some additional exploration targets that were never properly followed up upon. And so our ambition this season is to get back up there and do two things. One is to really try to understand, if you're going to drill up there, where you're going to drill, and then start putting some holes in again to try and reconcile that historical, validate that historical information. So we're not anticipating that Metz is a game changer for TDG in terms of our footprint in the Tudagon. It's certainly something we're very excited about, given what we understand to be the historical resource and reserve that Ron Nedlitsky and his colleagues were reporting as recently as 2009. So, it's something definitely to watch out for. The potential to blend the ore from Metz with, if we confirm it with ore from Shasta, would be an extremely exciting, concept to then, take forward through to economic analysis. But early days, and nice to be finding those kind of samples, but not unexpected.
All right. But still the focus very much on Shasta, it sounds like, this year, and with all the news coming out. Real quick, before I get you out of here, we do just need to quickly touch on that Nueva Esperanza acquisition that was in the works, that project down in Chile. This was terminated early in this year, so January, just this month. Well, what's the process here? Why was that deal terminated?
Look, when we embarked upon that journey to try and acquire that asset, silver gold asset in Chile, there were a few key reasons as a company why we thought it was prudent. The first one is that we'd never operated fully and hadn't established our operating footprint in the Tudagon. And so as a company, we have to make sure that we're hedging all aspects and all dimensions of the business. And so one of the reasons was to try and make sure that we had that multi-jurisdictional focus. We've now operated successfully with First Nation support in the Tudagon. And so that rationale for continuing with the Chilean acquisition fell away. The second reason for Chile, looking at Chile, was it was a more advanced asset. We were approaching it as a turnkey silver gold producing asset. A couple of things have changed in that landscape. The first one was, you may have been following the political regime change within Chile. It's moved in a different direction than historically in terms of the noises coming out for constitutional change, but also the movement towards a federalized mining tax regime that we believe could end up being fairly punitive. And so given that backdrop of uncertainty, that diminuted the opportunity in our minds as well. And then the other reason is that, the Shasta results so far have exceeded our expectations, and we expect them to continue to do so. So when you fold all that together, you need to be 100% conviction that is the right thing still to do. And, we felt as of this year that we didn't have that conviction for the reasons I've stated, and yet we do have that for the Tudagon. And so on that basis, and trying to think about discovery cost per mineable ounce, protecting that net asset value per share, those are our key mandates from our stakeholders, and doing it all in a sustainable and respectful way. And so we think that the Tudagon is the right place to focus to do that, and that we expect to make sterling progress over the next couple of years.
All right, Fletcher, thank you for this update. If anybody has any follow-up questions, please email me, Fleck@kereport.com. We'll get Fletcher back on the back of some more drill results. And Fletcher, keep us up to date on these drill results. There's a lot that's been coming out on a very regular basis, so I assume we'll be chatting again soon. Thanks for your time today.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Corey.